I'm Gab, he's Jules, Blue Skies over West London. Jules, we're going to talk about midweek rounds in France, in La Liga, in the Bundesliga. But we've been preempted because we knew that the UEFA versus Super League judgment was going to come out today. What we did know is that it would be so seismic, so it first appeared.
That's right.
Basically, the key finding here, and all right, take a step back, but essentially this whole proceeding takes forever. It took forever. The Attorney General came out and gave out a view like a long time ago, like 6 months ago. And now we have the final verdict, the final written reasons, the final judgment, I guess. And this judgment says that UEFA have abused their position, UEFA and FIFA, as organizers, because they organize European competitions and also they regulate them. This case was brought by an entity called A22, which is linked to the original Super League members.
That's right.
Real Madrid and Barcelona were kind of the two clubs that were left in it, at least publicly. They brought this case. They were originally in Madrid. Then it went to the European Court of Justice. And on the surface, the headline is undoubtedly that they won.
Yeah, it feels like a little victory, certainly, for the Super League, for especially the two clubs, well, the two main clubs still left in it, Barcelona and Real Madrid, and their presidents, Florentino Perez and Joan Laporta, in the sense that it looks like, and certainly what the European Court is saying is like, basically, the way that UEFA and FIFA blocked the Super League project was unlawful. They were not allowed to do that. The way that the rules that they have relating to accepting other competitions is just not, it's not right.
So that is the headline, and that was in, because they released something called the executive summary, right, in the morning. And it makes it pretty clear that that's what they found. But then you have the actual judgment. And again, you know my thoughts on lawyers and legalese. It's very long. And already, when you speak to the two sides, to A22 and to UEFA, they're both putting their real spin on this.
Yeah.
Because one of the arguments that they're making is saying, okay, so UEFA can't pre-approve a league. They can't say, oh, no, you can't do this league, or you have to come to us for approval if you want to start a new competition, right? But in fact, what they're saying is their system for providing pre-approval is wrong and is illegal.
Yeah.
UEFA have since introduced a new system in 2022, for example, which wasn't considered by this court because this court moves in slow motion. Does this mean that UEFA still have the power? That's not clear to me, and I think we'll then have further test cases to interpret this.
Yeah.
Or until the legal scholars can come out and tell us what's up with this. The other thing, which I think fans want to know, is does this mean that tomorrow, you know, we're back to April 2021 and we're going to have this massive Super League?
Yeah.
The answer is probably we won't, because in a number of countries, in England and in Italy, I'm not sure about what the situation is like in France, but they actually passed legislation where you can't leave. You can't join a league that's not recognized by UEFA UEFA approval.
Yeah.
So effectively, if you were to play in this, you would forfeit your right to play in the Premier League, hypothetically.
Yeah.
That I think can still be challenged, but that again is going to take time.
Yeah, it's a faff.
It's gonna go down the road.
So you don't. So do you actually think that today actually changes something? Really? I know it looks like a small victory for the Super League. You know, people, A22, Florentino Perez, Joan Laporta, blah, blah, blah. But do you actually think that it's that big, what is happening today?
It's hard to tell, frankly, because of the legal intricacies. But no, I don't think this is like the Bosman case at all. Okay. The idea with UEFA abusing their monopoly situation, because they are regulators and they are competition organizers at the same time, I think that's out there. And I think we knew that it was heading in that direction. The question is there a specificity,
specificity.
Of sport? Is there something within that tells us, well, wait a minute, sport is different. This is not a normal business. To what degree would they go down that road? That is what we didn't know. And I think that part is still open to interpretation.
Yeah.
In nuts and bolts, UEFA's new approval system that they introduced in 2022, is that compliant with European law?
Because the court also said today that their judgment doesn't mean that a competition like such as the Super League project must necessarily be approved. So they're just saying, listen, we think that UEFA
exactly
abused their position of dominant
and they need to revise their systems.
Yeah.
So, I apologize if, and to our viewers as well, if we can't give you cold, hard answers. I almost wonder.
I don't think there are any.
If it's by design.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think you've explained really well, Gab, what this means, how we are in this process that's going to be long anyway. I don't think, I mean, Real Madrid and A22, Barca can say that, yeah, we've won, football is free, all of that. I think we all know that this is a little bit misleading and that it's far more complex than just thinking like, okay, now the Super League is back on track, this is what we're going to do. And they've put actually on paper a format of what the Super League would look like now, which we can go into more details, but there's still a lot of hurdles, right?
There's a ton of hurdles. What's interesting about the format that they put on paper, and essentially, I know you have some details there, Jules.
Yeah, because you told me, so I wrote it down.
But you would have a first division.
Yeah, start here.
The star tier.
For the stars, I guess. Yeah.
Then you have a second division, which is called the gold league.
Yeah, for the gold teams.
Which those two both have 16 teams. And there's a third division called the turd league. No, just kidding. Just kidding. Being honest. No. It's not. It's called the blue league.
You're just blue.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, you know, if you fly British Airways, you got sort of, you know,
exactly,
gold tier, silver tier, blue tier.
But
basically the format is, in the top tier, in the star tier, you would have the 16 teams split into two groups of eight.
Yeah.
And they would play everybody home and away. So you'd have 14 games.
Yeah.
And then the top teams would qualify for an end-of-season tournament / playoffs. And they think this would be far more exciting and innovative because you would get more matches among the top teams.
Yeah, so you can expect the top eight. This, for example, the first in the star tier, the 16 clubs would be the four best in England, the four best in Germany, the four best in Spain, right, four in Italy. So that's already
16.
No,
they have to make room for Paris Saint-Germain.
Of course.
And then the interesting thing is if you're at the bottom, you would get relegated to the gold tier.
Yeah.
And then the gold tier, you get relegated down to the blue tier.
Yeah.
So what I find really interesting is they say that, well, this would make it open to everybody, right? Because nobody would be guaranteed a spot. True, nobody would be guaranteed a spot. But if you're in the start here and then you'd have to get relegated twice.
To have to requalify, basically, right?
Yeah, and then fall out. And then you would qualify via your domestic competition.
Because you only qualify for the blue tier, right? Through your domestic competition. If you already start or gold, you stay there unless you get relegated, like you said, to the blue and then again.
And not just that, but in the blue tier, you also have a bunch of teams that have been relegated from the tier before. You have a bunch of teams that have avoided relegation out of. So in reality, I'd love to know how many actual spaces are available every year for somebody qualified via their domestic leagues.
Yeah, I agree.
I wonder about the impact to the domestic leagues, because right now the race for a top four finish is a big deal. If it's not a big deal because, hey, look, I already know I'm in the star tier next year or the gold tier or the blue tier, then how's that going to impact it?
Yeah.
They make a lot of claims about to have games on free television. Like, all of this needs to stand the test of time. But all it seems so far is we've created an alternative format. The approval system, the UEFA can't say no and send us all away.
Yeah.
They have to consider it. There is an approval system that UEFA have in place. This approval system, which was introduced in 2022, may or may not be compliant with European law, and presumably we'll need to have another long-winded, wasteful trial about whether it is compliant.
Yeah.
But the irony in all this, Jules, and this has been rumored for a long, long time, is that the next evolution of European competition is sort of post the Swiss model, which is coming in next year.
Next season, yeah.
Is some sort of three-tier thing like this.
But you know, I've said to you from the beginning, from April 2021, when the Super League, we had this earthquake of the Super League, blah, 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 that in the end, it might not be called the Super League, but UEFA will be involved. All those top clubs will be very happy, Florentino and Laporta included. A22 might have a role in this in terms of organization or marketing rights or commercial rights, something like that. And in the end, it will be very similar to this, like, three-tier for what the Champions League is now. Three-tier camp, probably the same for the Europa League and maybe the same for the Conference League or something like that. And then everybody would shake hands and be very happy. And we would have done all of that, all this arguing, going back and forth, paying lawyers, your best friends, a fortune, to get to a point where actually they all agree that, yeah, you can't do it on your own without UEFA, that UEFA also need all those top clubs. And maybe they need a reformer of their competitions and just to rethink and make it a bit more modern, a bit more energetic, appealing, you know, whatever. And in the end, I'm convinced this is exactly how it's going to finish in, like, I don't know, 5-6 years time.
Yeah, I also think this idea that it needs to be more modern and innovative and make more money. And so, look, if you're unhappy with UEFA's governance, that's one thing. We can have a discussion. I think there are things to be legitimately unhappy about, right? Legitimately unhappy with that, with the way they enforce their own financial sustainability rules, lack of transparency in certain issues, a whole bunch of things which I think are very legitimate. But to say, oh, well, the Champions League is boring, European competition are boring, I'm like, on what basis do you say that? Mm. Do you say this based on the fact that the television rights could be higher? But the reality is television rights are flat or declining everywhere. Look at the Premier League, right? I think they would acknowledge the fact that the Premier League is the most successful football league in the world. Maybe the most successful sports league in the world. Yeah. The NFL might debate that. Whatever, it's up there, right? The Champions League revenue, their TV revenue continues to grow. They've expanded it, whatever. I don't know the future is necessarily going to be from old school pay TV subscribers following that old model. Maybe it might be something different. But if you look at, if you use other metrics like sponsorship, like engagement on social media, all these other things, I think the Champions League is still hugely relevant.
Yeah, but Florentino Perez says that, you know, the younger generation don't watch whole 90-minute games.
So
which is not true.
Yeah, and then he brings no evidence for this. This is another issue about this, is that, and this is the other irony, right? This three-tier system that we're talking about, this is a lot like the system that Andrea Agnelli floated back in 2019. Mm. Now, at the time, Andrea Agnelli was head of the European Clubs Association. European Clubs Association, by the way, who have come out very squarely on UEFA's side with a statement in the last couple hours. He was negotiating the club's position with UEFA. He introduced the system. He was on the UEFA executive committee. I'm not saying he could have definitely passed this if this is what he wanted, but he was in a very strong position to do so.
Yeah, for sure.
And then what happened? They didn't. And instead he chose to go down the route of the original Super League. I don't know. The climate has changed, Jules.
Yeah.
I think if they can get something out of it, I think it does open the road, maybe, hypothetically. A competition that maybe it opens the road a little bit for cross-border competitions. Like, let's say, if La Liga and Serie A wanted to maybe merge or do some sort of merge tournament, I think they're going to have more latitude to do that.
Yeah, that's true. I
think there's a massive can of worms, like we said before. Premier League clubs joining, German clubs joining if they even want to.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a long
you can't have a Super League without, if the English clubs really, because of that law that passed, can't join a new competition not approved by UEFA, you can't have a Super League without Bayern Munich, who were not keen in the first place. I mean, PSG maybe not, but PSG were not in because they were with Seferin and UEFA. And then no English clubs? Not possible.
The thing about after Brexit, obviously, English clubs are not bound by the ECJ same way that they were bound before. But equally, it's a British law.
Yeah, exactly.
that was passed. And what I find also quite interesting is that as we tape this now, the verdict's been out for just over 3.5 hours. We haven't had one club, other than Real Madrid and Barcelona, come out and say, yippee, this is a great day in European football. Mm. I think what will happen is we maybe see a different revenue distribution going forward. We may see a different handling of the commercial and sponsorship contracts.
Yeah.
Because that's much more of a kind of a business sort of competition law sphere, right?
Yeah.
Where if I'm, say, Paris Saint-Germain, well, Paris Saint-Germain is always a bad example of everything. If I'm Barcelona, I'm Barcelona, right? And let's say UEFA want to go and do a deal with, what's a competitor to Spotify? Amazon Music or YouTube Music,
something
right?
Something like that,
I went like, wait a minute, I'm at the Spotify camp now and you're doing a deal with one of my competitors. How do we sort this out when I, Barcelona, provide this much? I think these are legitimate questions.
I think
there should be a legal framework. You're waiting for a place like, there already is a legal framework from it. Well, whatever. Maybe we should have clarity on this. Maybe the club should have a bigger say. You have already created a new company where the clubs are, or the ECA are joint shareholders. Maybe you can go further on that. But in terms of clubs suddenly being allowed to do what they want, in terms of there being the appetite, I don't know. Let me ask you this, and let me leave you with this thought. We know all these clubs effectively were lied to us the first time around, right?
Yeah.
Right? John W. Henry, liar. Right? He then apologized for it, to his credit, right?
Yeah.
Glazers didn't apologize afterwards because they don't like to speak in public, but we know that they all did a 180 and they all pledged to stay, and so did Chelsea and Arsenal. And could they all be lying to us again? Could they all be sitting there and saying, okay, Florentino, like, you like playing the role of the bad guy. Laporta, nobody likes you anyway. You guys go ahead. Strike a deal that benefits all of us.
And then we're going to come background, they're still like...
Yeah, do we think that?
No.
Do we think that they could come back in?
No, now. Not after the backlash from the fans in April 2021. I think it would be a very different... If they were to do it, it would be in a very, very different way than just catch everybody by surprise like they did 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and just go, hey, this is it. We've all joined this new Super League. Come on board, kind of thing. I don't think that they would do that mistake again.
All right. Time will tell. And again, I'm going to repeat my caveat again. This is complicated. It's a very long judgment. People are saying different things. Maybe they'll find stuff in there that leaves room open. But in our early reading of this, there will be some change. But this is not sort of the seismic thing that people were saying it was originally.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, enough Super League. How about some Barcelona instead?
Yes.
Jules... They had gone three games without a win.
Yep.
Barcelona, Xavi said they needed a win. They got the win, 3-2 against Almeria. But then we saw the grumpiest possible Xavi. I love Xavi. I love him as a
course.
Player.
We all do.
I really like and respect him. He came out with really, really tough quotes, especially with the first half. He said, and I'm kind of quoting from the Spanish here, but bear with me. But he says, I don't accept the first half. We are not 2010 Barcelona. Either we run like animals or we won't get there. Either we give our lives or we win nothing. We need soul.
Yeah.
That's a really, really damning assessment.
Yeah, it is. And they played Almeria, who is the worst team in La Liga by far, one of the worst teams in Europe overall. And again, with no margin, they created chances and they could have scored more. Gundogan missed a... I mean, a chance, I don't even know how he doesn't make contact on the ball on the line to put it in. But so it's not so much about the chances they created, because we said before that they lack efficiency, like Lewandowski does, for example. It's more that, again, they conceded two really bad goals. They look really shaky defensively, which is strange considering they were by far the best defensive team in Europe last season. But when you look at the quotes, Gab, and especially the one about I don't accept the first half, who came off at halftime?
Christensen and Jean-Felix.
So Christensen is having bad games for quite a while. Defensively, we said he was not working. He was 1-1 at halftime. The Joao-Felix one, for me, this is a message to Joao-Felix. I took you off and I put Ferran Torres on. So not Messi, not Cristiano, not Mbappe, Ferran Torres on for you, because clearly the lack of commitment and effort from Joao-Felix, which was obvious for us to see on television anyway already, I think Xavi didn't accept it.
Yeah, and in Ferran Torres as well, you know, you're bringing in somebody who obviously, he has his critics. He's far from a perfect footballer, but he is somebody, also because he was schooled under Pep at Manchester City, who will attack the space, who will run, who's going to work, you know, who's going to work his backside off.
Yeah.
We've seen him at City. We've seen very talented players dropped because they weren't. He didn't run enough off the ball. Look, Sergio Aguero, to name but one. So I think that probably was a direct message. On the flip side, what struck me was you mentioned the defensive mistakes. They're kind of individual errors. I mean, I wasn't great collectively, but and they were individual errors committed by the guy who's actually been reliable for most of the last 2 years.
What's happening to him?
Ronald Araujo.
Help me.
On the first one, on the offside, where. By the way, I love how the referee, like, you know, after he scores, he puts the flag up for offside. He's like, the linesman, I've covered all my bases. Yeah, it was close, but it was obvious that he was
even
off.
Even Batistao says, like, if it is, it won't be much. And it was just gone.
So I think he gets the line wrong there. On the second one, where Iñaki Peña, you know, and my commentator is like, oh, it's a howler from Iñaki Peña. I'm like, I have to assume that Iñaki Peña calls for the ball.
Of course,
right?
Surely.
Any goalkeeper in that situation is going to call for the ball. And so, If you're Araujo, you have to get out of the way unless he doesn't hear him. Unless maybe the mask he's wearing like somehow blocks his ears as well.
Araujo is making Peña drop the ball, not the other way around. And maybe Peña should have jumped with his knee high first. Like,
great, so he can give Araujo a concussion.
I know, but at least he doesn't concede, you know. but still, it's just,
what I thought was also remarkable is the crowd.
What crowd?
The people at the Montjuic.
It's half empty.
And again, we need to explain this for context for people who maybe haven't been to Barcelona or aren't familiar with the situation. And Barcelona fans, traditionally, it's an enormous fan base. When the Camp Nou is full, it's the biggest stadium in Europe or second biggest, right, in terms of average attendance.
Yeah.
But it's not always full.
Yeah.
And it's even less full in Montjuic, where they're playing while they're renovating the Camp Nou. And people don't like the stadium because it's not a football-specific stadium and because it's in another part of town. But still, I struggle with the idea that I don't want to go to watch my team. You can say, oh, it's only Almeria and it's on television. It's fine.
No,
but you're not going to watch Almeria. You're going to watch your team.
Yeah, and also, okay, it's Wednesday night at 7 p.m. local time, so it's a bit early for Spain. But still, I don't think it was empty against Girona. In the big Catalan derby,
it's not far for Girona fans to travel.
No, and some of them did travel, but from the home end, certainly not full. So it's not the first time, and maybe that also plays a part of the lack of intensity from that first half. By the way,
it could be the fans who were there were pretty intense in their booing of the team, to the point that after Rafinha scores his goal, you know he does a thing where he puts his fingers in his ears. You know my thoughts on players reacting to the crowd. Here he's reacting to criticism from his own fans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite know how I feel about that, but I will be asking you that. I have a major problem when people do it to fans of the other team.
Yeah?
In Rafinha's case, though, I don't know. I don't know how I should feel about this.
I'm not too sure it's for the crowd. I think it's one of those, the Memphis Depay. I think Memphis was probably the first one to do that kind of celebration where you say, like, you know, I'm just focusing on myself. I'm not really listening to the noise outside. Yeah. It doesn't have to be from the home fans. It could be from the media, from away fans.
But in that game, when your team's getting booed by their own fans, it sends a different message. Maybe you need to get a little awareness.
It's different to the Bruno Guimaraes, Cole Palmer kind of celebration after the penalty in the penalty shootout in the League Cup that we will mention later on the show, for example. Maybe. I don't know. I saw it and I didn't think there was any problem in it.
All right.
You want to show some love to Sergio Roberto, right? Right? You know how I feel about Sergio Roberto.
I know you're not a fan. It's funny because I watched a post game on Liga TV, and they had former Barcelona and Chelsea legend Chapi Ferrero.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's related to Sergio Roberto somehow, but he absolutely loves Sergio Roberto. And he says, he sacrificed himself at right back over the years. He's been so unlucky with injuries. He says, like, you know, he's one of the best attacking midfielders in the Liga.
No.
No? You don't think so?
No.
No.
I was about to tweet.
No, okay.
I was, before his first goal, he missed already a chance. I was about to tweet, to post something like, how is Sergio Roberto playing in this team, please? And then he scored. Literally a minute later, he scored the header. And I was like, okay, maybe not this time.
He has a contract. He's there. He can contribute. I, I, I do want to take it, though, to the midfield. Gavi's out for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
Pedri, I think, is going to be out maybe till January. Then I think it's going
to
take
2 to 3 weeks, so after the winter break.
But it'll probably take him time as well. Like, you know, I thought, and I feel bad for him because I thought he played well against Valencia.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like he's building back up. And I look at this midfield and I'm saying, I don't know what level Gundogan can provide. I feel like he's been really up and down.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's almost like, looks to me like, you know, he had that great season last year at City, and it's difficult to then follow up on a new team.
Yeah.
De Jong's back, which is good news. Romeo had a stinker at the weekend, but, you know, that's not going
to
be
Romeo. I never want to see Romeo ever again wearing that shirt.
But somebody's got to play a midfield on this team.
I know, play Fermin, who's still young, but we saw last night there's a couple of good passes. He runs a lot. He's got a lot of energy. I think he's potentially a really good player. Gundogan, I agree with you. I'm not really sure. I don't even know what he wants to do, where he wants to play, because he was such a very specific role under Pep last season, especially, where he was a bit of everything, really, in a way. But only the Pep system in that City team allowed him to be a second striker, sometimes even a 9, sometimes an 8, sometimes a 10, sometimes a 6, sometimes a bit of all of that in one. I'm not really sure this Barca team right now is structured like that. There's that kind of freedom, or I'm not even sure if freedom is the right word, but I just don't. And certainly that's not what they need. They need Gundogan to do one thing and do it well, whatever that is that Xavi is asking it to. So whether it's that being really high up on the pitch, close to Lewandowski, almost as a second striker, fair enough. Maybe it's to be the guy that Pedri can't be now because he's injured in the second phase of attacking plays, where you need to be the guy to progress that ball forward and create something, which Gundogan seems to me that he does less and less now. At times I saw him of that kind of player, not so much anymore. But I don't know, there's clearly something not right, because we don't see enough of him being decisive. And yesterday, again, I know that chance, I don't know what happens. He looks like he was scared of the ball, closed his eyes, and the ball was gone, and then that's it. But that should have been a goal.
I want to end this by taking it back to that quote about 2010 Barca. Because I'm old, I remember 2010 Barcelona. And, you know, with Xavi, I think he's actually wrong when he says either we run like animals or we won't get there. That Barcelona team, the 2009-10 team, and like the
even
earlier 10-11, iterations,
to be fair,
those guys ran like animals. You look at the numbers of the so they managed to have the highest possession, and they also managed to cover the greatest distance. That was a pressing team. You know, Messi back then was younger and ran a lot.
Yeah.
Iniesta, Xavi, I mean, Samuel Eto'o, come on. So it's interesting, because there's no shame in running.
But it's a different style of running, right? Isn't it? Because when you don't have as much of the ball, or doesn't use it as well as...
You don't use it as well, because your players aren't as good.
2010, 2011 is the greatest football side that's ever played, right?
Well, like, I don't know the greatest ever
club,
played, but...
No, but club side. Yeah. Club side, really.
Right up there.
And I don't even think he should compare. Nobody's comparing. Why is he comparing? No. Nobody's comparing. I don't think those players believe that they are like that Pep team. So I thought that was a bit hard. But I get his point.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, enough Barca. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Liverpool are through to the semi-finals of the League Cup with a 5-1 drubbing of West Ham. Jules, how about that Szoboszlai strike?
Yeah, that was pretty special. We know why he hits the ball so well, obviously, because when he was a kid, his dad on purpose bought him some boots that were too small, so his feet would not grow, because his dad was convinced that the smaller your feet, the better player you are. Okay, this is a true story, but that's not why he hits the ball so well, by the way. So don't do that with your kids. Don't do that with your kids.
Please.
Please, don't do that. However, we know, since really he burst onto the scenes when he was in Salzburg and Leipzig, that he just has this incredible technique, the way he hits the ball, and we have seen it already at Liverpool, and it was another example.
I am concerned, again, a parental advisory. Zlatan Ibrahimovic hits the ball better than Szoboszlai. Cristiano Ronaldo hits the ball better than Szoboszlai. I guarantee you, both have far bigger feet than Szoboszlai does.
And normal feet. I just wonder if his toes are a bit like...
I don't know. This is disgusting.
But you
Move
know
on.
What? I'm really disappointed by West Ham. You know how much I don't like David Moyes anyway. But I just don't think, even away at Liverpool, you can just...
It's the League Cup.
It doesn't matter. It was a strong West Ham team.
Oh, yeah, strong. Gerard Bowen.
It was still a strong team.
Yeah, okay.
Jared Bowen is... really good in that position.
He's a centre forward.
Not
in
that team. I'm not happy with Moyes anyway. No treble for Inter this year, Gab. They're out of the Coppa d'Italia, losing at home to Bologna in extra time after they came from behind.
Yeah, no treble. They won the last two. Look, Simone Inzaghi, what does he do? He rotated again, but it was still, like you said, a very strong team. They figure, Bologna, you know, they're flying high in the league. We got this. They would have had it. Lautaro Martinez misses a penalty.
Yeah.
But then Inter actually take the lead to Carlos Augusto an extra time, and you figure this is done. But then what happened? Bologna, who, by the way, were also resting players.
Yeah.
They sent Joshua Zirkzee.
Yeah, we love Zirkzee.
His two assists, the first one especially, again, see, watch the highlight.
He's such
essentially,
a good player.
Off a corner kick, the ball is going out of play. He somehow flies through the air, and he looks with his eyes, back heels the ball, does his flying back heel kick for an assist to make it 1-1. And then sets up Ndoye, who's, I don't think, has ever scored in his life, makes it 2-1, certainly not for Bologna, to Bologna.
What Thiago Motta is doing with those players, the Ndoye and Ferguson and Zerzi.
Incredible. One of the youngest teams in Europe, by the way. Chelsea also advanced in the League Club Jewels, past Newcastle on penalties, in a game that Kieran Trippier probably wants to forget.
Yeah, and I mean,
who's the guy who's always like, Kieran Trippier is always a seven. He's always a seven. I know it wasn't you. It's somebody else.
Yeah.
He knows who they are.
I feel a bit for Trippier because I think he needs a holiday.
I don't.
Go to the Maldives. I don't care where you go. Go somewhere hot. Do nothing for 5 days, 7 days, and then come back. He's drained physically, mentally.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, Newcastle have had a horrendous list of injuries. They've had to play the same guys over and over again.
Yeah. Not fit, by the way, Trippier himself.
Fine. Where have they not had injuries in his position? Right?
What do you mean?
Like, this is a guy, if you're going to rotate somebody, this is the guy you could have rotated,
he didn't
right?
start. Kraft started at right back.
But this guy shouldn't be playing. He was bad at the weekend as
I know, but at some point, maybe you bring him on just for that kind of experience to keep the one nil win.
So you can advance
and instead, in the 92nd minute, it's his mistake that cost you a goal, and then he goes to penalties, there's no extra time in the League Cup. He misses his pen as well after the mistake that cost the goal directly. I just think, but again, Newcastle with 22% of the ball. That's 2-2. 22.
Who cares? It's the League
Cup. I care.
It's away from
but
home.
But again, don't play like that. Please, don't play like that. It's not the first time we've said it about Newcastle. Don't play like that. And in the end, Chelsea were... Okay, they scored only because of a mistake, but they created, they went forward. It was still a bit chaotic and a bit messy and all of that. But at least they put a lot of effort in, more than Newcastle, really.
I'm happy we're not going to talk about the League Cup for a while.
Okay. Bayer Leverkusen rolled past Bochum 4-0 to make it 25 games unbeaten in all competitions. Gab, incredible. And how about your boy, Patrick Schick?
A hat-trick. You know what? It's at the perfect time because guess what? Victor Boniface, who, by the way, came on and scored because how he rules.
For Schick, yeah.
He's going away to the Cup of Nations, but that's okay because Schick is hitting.
But you know what happened in this game, right? Xabi Alonso benches Boniface, Kosunu, and Tapsoba. The three players, almost like the three players are going to not be there when the winter break finishes, when the league starts again, because they will be
out. So you can test out their replacements.
This is perfect.
Whatever. 25 games unbeaten. That is a new record for German football, apparently.
Yeah.
Two goals for Kylian Mbappe on his birthday. As Paris Saint-Germain beat Metz 3-1. And he gets an extra present as well. Little bro Ethan makes his debut as well, Jules. By the way, can I say something? You know how, like, Mbappe...
Don't be mean.
No.
Okay.
Okay, let me put it this way. Ethan, I believe, is more handsome than Mbappe. He doesn't have that weird round head.
It depends on your taste. Some don't think so. If you do, then good for you.
Okay,
Ethan is 16. Yesterday on Wednesday was Kylian's 25th birthday. Ethan is turning 17 on December 29th.
Yeah, so that tells us something about the parents' habits.
Maybe. The whole family was there. The mom, the dad in the stands, the aunties,
how much
aunties,
does it suck
the niece,
for the Mbappe family, though? Nephew. Like Christmas, birthday parties, all like within a week.
I know. I don't know. But it was special. My heart was melting, really, when I saw Ethan.
I thought it would be.
Great present from Luis Enrique to Kylian. What an amazing first goal by Mbappe, by the way. If you haven't seen it, go and check it out. Amazing, amazing night. I can talk about that forever if you want.
No, let's not. Okay.
Gab, we're getting the Club World Cup final. Everybody expected, really, Manchester City against Fluminense. Any chance, do you think, for the Fluminense old-timers, Marcelo, Ganso, Felipe Melo?
There's always a chance because it's a football match, but they have to play a lot better than they did against El Ahly. They won 2-0. One goal was in garbage time. The other one was late. Lots of chances on both sides. For Manchester City, we played this weird strikerless system against Urawa Red Diamonds. I think they had 110% possession, which I think I didn't know was possible, but eventually they broke through. I expected more from Urawa, to be fair.
Are we excited by this final? We should be, right?
I am.
So Friday night, by the way. Friday, the final.
Long range heroics from Harry Kane as Bayern win 2-1 away to Wolfsburg. Jules, back on track?
I mean, they were back on track at the weekend anyway already with that win against Stuttgart that we mentioned at home. This one was away and it was a different style again because this time they had a lot of the ball, more of the ball than they did against Stuttgart.
We saw the Guerreiro-Pavlovic midfield again that you like so much.
Yeah, but I just love that. Thomas Müller with two assists.
Okay, no. He does not get an assist for the Müller one. You side foot
the
ball.
It's still giving him as an assist. I know, I agree with you, but great strike by Harry. He looked like he was freezing and yet he was still in short sleeve. Harry Kane, I love that from him. Although he said that he's going to not stay in Germany for Christmas or in England, he's going to go somewhere very sunny and very warm. So good to him. Meanwhile, Atletico Madrid, Gabby, go down to 10 men and they let a 2-goal lead at home to Getafe slip away and can only draw 3-3. We were concerned about Barca dropping out of the top four. We said that earlier on the show and last week as well. Should we be concerned about Atleti instead?
Yes, you should be concerned because, look, they won every game at home this season, right? Until this point, right? Then the idiot gets himself, the savage gets himself to send off after half an hour. You still go 3-1. This is Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
I expect you to be able to hang on to
a
2-goal lead at home.
But then it's a deflected goal. Griezmann deflects the ball.
But they gave up so many chances late. They couldn't get out of the back. Nah. Antoine Griezmann scored twice in that game to equal Atletico's all-time scoring record held by Luis Aragonés. Jules, he did it in six fewer games. 364 versus 370.
Yeah, and with
you'd almost think one was a forward, one was a midfielder.
But still, you know, 173 goals. Grizzly at some point will obviously beat it, and he will be very happy. It's a shame that came without the win and only the draw. But we said when he's good, when he plays well, everything goes well for Atletico. When he doesn't, like we saw at the weekend, then I think they struggle more.
And that's a concern, I think, if you're Simeone.
Yeah, he's a wonderful player.
You can't be so Griezmann-dependent at this
stage. He's a wonderful player. I'm so, so, so happy for him, really, especially after he came back from Barcelona. Napoli are out of the Coppa Italia in the most humiliating way, Gabby. They lost 4-0 at home to Frosinone.
What can I say? 4-0. Walter Mazzarri, the master of disaster.
That's a bit hard.
Napoli had a chance in the Simeone goal to Salah. They thought they'd taken the lead.
Yeah.
Look, I have no issue with you mixing it up because it is the Coppa Italia, but you need to think a little bit. How important is resting players here? Like, what am I resting them for the Champions League in February? You have a big enough squad. You should deal with it. I don't get this at all. I think he sent the wrong message. I think he sent the message that Frosinone don't really matter.
I
don't think his changes helped at all. Look, Frosinone only scored, I think, in the last 20 minutes, and then they scored all those goals at the end when Napoli were chasing. But
it's
an embarrassment. And this is not what you want. This is not, you know, you don't want to become a lame duck manager at this stage of the season because it's going to have a knock-on effect on your players. Big bounce back win for Stuttgart, Jules. 3-0 against Augsburg, and Seru Girassi is up to 17 goals.
I guess it's always a good sign if you get spanked 1 weekend albeit by Bayern Munich, then you can bounce back 3 days later with a really good performance overall, not just the goals, not just the 3-0 win. It was good. Girassi scores, Wundaf scores, Forrest scores, all their big players scored. That's when
Silas nearly scored. Should have scored at the end. Scored,
but all those big boys scored, the leaders. Carrying this team like that is good. They've had an amazing first half of the season, really. They deserve a lot of credit, a lot of love. Sebastian Hoeneß and all his players. So well done to them. I'm glad they responded that way, certainly. Talking about response, by the way, Borussia Dortmund stink it up again like they did at the weekend, drawing 1-1 at home to Mainz. Gab, top four is now 6 points away.
Yeah, at some point there's going to come a concern.
Chelsea's going to go now. You know, the other day I kind of defended him a little bit, but not surely.
I don't know from the outside whether it's these players need to get a kick up the backside. I do know that I'd love to know what the director of football, what his role is in this, what how much contact he has with the first team squad. Because this, to me, feels a little bit like Terzic is out there on his own. Right?
Yeah.
And this isn't Terzic. This isn't Sir Alex Ferguson or Jose Mourinho or whatever, somebody with that personality. I think there's people here who are clearly not performing. It's not all down to him. He hasn't fixed certain things. I still don't think he... I understand the full Krug move, but if you're going to do that, it's going to impact other things, and he hasn't made that work. We did have a Gio Reyna sighting late on. Thought he'd scored, disallowed. There's a lot to sort out here.
Yeah.
And 6 points is a lot. 6 points is a lot.
Yeah.
Jules, you love the League Cup.
I do!
Chelsea will play Middlesbrough, who beat somebody, and Liverpool will face Fulham, who beat somebody else. Everton, I believe, on penalties. Yeah.
Middlesbrough beat who?
I have no idea. Port Vale? What is that? any chance? I'm kidding. Any chance of upsets?
I hope so. I love an upset, as
Port
you know.
Port Vale, by the way, is near Stoke.
Is it where that singer was from?
Robbie Williams. Yeah, there you go. He's from Port Vale.
Okay. I didn't know where Port Vale was, but I knew about Robbie Williams. I love an upset, so I hope so. You know my conspiracy theory sometimes about draws, stuff like that. I could have literally put everything I have, my kids, my house, my car, my what, anything, that Chelsea and Liverpool would not have been drawn against each other in these semi-finals.
It's one of the many reasons why this competition just...
So I think a lot of people are hoping for a Chelsea-Liverpool final at Wembley. Obviously, more than a full Middlesbrough.
A lot of television executives, perhaps.
How great would it be if Middlesbrough faced Fulham in the final on February something, whenever that is. But hey, let's see. There's obviously two legs, as you know. So four more games for you to watch.
And wait, do they play extra time at the end of the second one? Or do they... I don't know. I just hope it doesn't
like
get there.
Yeah.
And it's in January as well. Like, you want
to
chill out,
for us to
recuperate.
No, I can't wait. This was back on Monday, but Girona beat up Alaves 3-0. Both they and Real Madrid are in action later today on Thursday as we record the show in the morning. They'll play in the league and Girona will be away at Betis, which is tough, but they still keep impressing everyone.
No, comprehensive, dismantling. I think it was Dobbik opening the scoring. They just keep rolling. And again, I think this Betis game will tell us a lot about who gets to be first at Christmas in Spain, which is, you know, it's a nice plus.
Yeah.
But, they're not going away. It's like a weird rash, you know, that no matter how you treat it, it just, you know, continues to affect you. Newcastle director of football Dan Ashworth is the latest to be linked with the Manchester United job. Jules, good choice.
I think he's a great choice for Manchester United.
Would this be a good choice for Dan Ashworth?
That's what I was going to come to in a little bit. Great because he's done a great job everywhere. Pretty much he's gone, especially now in Newcastle, of course, where he's been for almost 2 years now. It will come up to 2 years soon. He was great at Brighton, of course, before shaping that club, structuring that club.
West Brom.
Like they did West Brom. And even with England, he did a good job.
Yeah, they signed all
too.
Those players.
No, I mean, West Brom, I can't. To be fair, I remember so much. But so, is United, however, a good choice for Dan Ashworth right now, considering what is happening, what he's building at Newcastle? I'm not too sure.
I think it depends where he wants to go. I think it depends his relationship. If you can lay it out for him from Dan Ashworth's perspective, this is going to be the budget. You will decide our next manager, blah, blah, blah. Then I think it can be attractive. Because, look, Manchester United are a bigger club than Newcastle.
Yeah.
If he feels a loyalty there, I don't know what his relationship is like with Eddie Howe. I presume it's a good working relationship.
Yeah, I think so.
But equally, you know, when Eddie Howe at Bournemouth ended up falling out with some people at the end, right? So you never know where these things are going to go. Some people always say you don't want to stay in a place too long. I don't think Newcastle would begrudge him necessarily if he left, given what he's built thus far. Certainly doesn't hurt him being linked to another club.
For sure. And if United want the best, he's one of the best sporting directors that I think there is in Europe. So yeah, why not?
Wow.
Yeah, he is.
All right. Also, it's funny. Sorry, but can you just remind me about this with sporting directors? I'm gonna be Mr. Contrarian. So he was at Brighton, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, and Brighton signed a bunch of great players, yeah?
Yeah.
And then he left, right?
Yeah.
And then Brighton continued to sign a bunch of great players. All right, just point this out. Well,
no, doesn't mean that they can't do a good job without him.
I don't know. Maybe Newcastle should just buy Brighton and turn them into their B team.
Also back on Monday, Atalanta beat Salernitana 4-1. That means Roma are now down to 8th in the table, Gab. Is this a big deal for Jose Mourinho?
I think it's going to be a big deal if they're still 8th at the end of the season. There's a lot of clubs that are very close to each other. And look, I think, yes, they can win the next game and then jump back up to 5th or 6th. Equally, they have Torino behind them, and I think somebody else was like 3 points back. This can slide the other way just as quickly. So I think it's something to monitor. But it becomes a big deal at the end of the season. Nottingham Forest have sacked Steve Cooper and replaced them with Mr. Congeniality, Nuno Espirito Santo. Do you understand this, Jules?
So I understand that the relationship between Cooper and Marinakis, who is the Nottingham Forest
Evangelos
owner, his son, who is heavily involved, all of that was broken. Has been broken for a very long time. They don't get on. There was always a point where I think they would just get rid of him, right? However, this is one thing. It's okay. I'm okay with you sacking your manager. You don't get on. You don't share the same ideas anymore. Okay.
And it's about probably that more than the position on the table, because they are 5 points. I mean, they're near. They're 17th, but they're 5 points clear.
Yeah, exactly. And they also know that the three teams behind them, Burnley, Luton and Sheffield United,
aren't particularly good.
They're struggling. So you're right, it's more that. However, if he's to then replace the manager that you've just sacked, who is loved by the fans, by the way, and by the players, by Nuno, then I have to say, then you've lost me here.
I think what's also bizarro here, and how can I say this in a way that doesn't get me into trouble? Nuno is very closely associated with a certain football agent named Jorge Mendes. In fact, Nuno was Mendes' first client. Nottingham Forest love to go and spend money, and they make a million signings. I think Marinakis gets directly involved by the son and deal with a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
Is this going to change when Nuno's on board?
Uncle George is already quite heavily involved too.
But is this part of the reason now with Uncle George around that everything goes through him and they said, look, we're not going to sign 30 different players, right? And so Uncle George's like, well, if I'm going to be funneling the players, then let's get my guy in as manager. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe they get Joao Felix too. Meanwhile, Gab, the Daily Mail reports that if and when Sir Jim Ratcliffe is going to complete his deal for those 25% share in Manchester United, he's going to make cuts. That's not good news if you're a fan to hear that.
Was going to be making cuts to the number of people who work at the club. So these are some numbers here. And so Manchester United is a football club. They employ, and this is non-football staff, 1,112 people.
Wow.
Now, this is a benchmark. Liverpool, who are also a fairly big English club, they employ 900 people. Yep. Tottenham Hotspur employ 750. Arsenal employ 700. City employ 720, but then there's all those other dudes who work for City football groups you don't quite know. So, like, I'm not an expert in football orgs. I do know Manchester United have a ton of commercial revenue, which is presumably what these people bring in. That's their main job, right? Because it's the footballers.
And they've got offices around the world, too, and stuff like that, no?
Yeah, but it is a bit weird that they're, like, 20% more staff than the next highest club.
Yeah, maybe that's what he's looking at. True.
All that said, if you're looking to save money to spend more in your football club, as we know, most people who work for football clubs do not make a ton of money. They do it for the glamour.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Kike Sanchez-Flores gets his first win in charge at Sevilla, 3-0 over Granada. Jules, this means the problem was solely Diego Alonso.
I don't think it was only Diego Alonso, although as we know and as we've been telling from day one, he's not very good. Set pieces worked well for Kike Sanchez-Flores in a game against a Granada team that is not very good, and maybe Diego Alonso would have won that game too, I don't know. Sergio Ramos, who I think played a big part in Kike Sanchez-Flores coming at the club, scored two, which was maybe a sign. And at least you get that kind of really positive new manager bounce kind of thing, right?
So I want to see Sergio Ramos as player manager. Why not?
I know. Like you Troy Deeney, you know, at Forest Green Rovers. You didn't want to put that in.
No, because I don't care about that ridiculous like place. And I don't dislike Troy Deeney. I like Troy Deeney, in fact. But that whole thing is just not my thing.
MLS has decided that they want their reserve teams, so the B teams, not their main team, to compete in the US Open Cup. And many people are not happy with this.
Yeah, two guys who aren't. If you want to go into more detail on this, check out Herc and Seb Salazar from Football Americas. They did a whole segment on this.
So the US Open Cup is like the League Cup, right?
No, it's like the FA Cup.
The FA Cup, sorry. The FA
it's
Cup.
Like the FA Cup. It's been going for more than 100 years. It literally involves teams from all levels, and they compete against...
Yeah, so what's the problem for MLS?
MLS has said, well, some of these smaller teams that we have to play against, the pitches are bad, the players are bad, there's fixture congestion, and so we've decided that we want our teams to go and play their reserve teams. It's called like MLS Next Gen or something.
Yeah, Next Gen, yeah.
Now, a lot of people say, well, wait, hang on a minute. There's a bunch of... First of all, the reason you have fixture congestion is because, I mean, you set the schedule. You set the schedule to the point that you actually set the schedule and you play during the World Cup, right? So yeah, that's why you have fixture congestion, right? So you can control that. The other thing that they would point out is wouldn't have anything to do with the fact that if you play an MLS team, you know, the proper starting 11, and then they lose to somebody from the USL, which, of course, is kind of the next level down. We talk about levels, but there's no promotion relegation, obviously, but they're getting a lot of buzz and stuff like that. Then it's embarrassing for you. The other aspect to this, which I think a lot of people are underscoring, is that the commissioner of MLS is also on the board of the U.S. Soccer Federation. And this is obviously a U.S. Soccer Federation competition. The people have cited FIFA statutes. I haven't looked into it. I'm not a lawyer. That say, well, you have to compete if you want to be considered a Division I competition within a country. You have to compete in the national competitions. This is a national competition. I think it's sad. I made fun of the League Cup earlier for obvious reasons, but I wouldn't make fun of the FA Cup in the same way or any other competition.
I know.
This has been going for 100 years.
But that's
going
to surely change. They're going to revert back. And is this coming from MLS or from the team?
This is what I have a major problem with. This is coming from MLS.
Okay.
If it was the actual teams, if a club chooses, like, hey, look, we don't care, we're going to play the next gen, fine, right? But this is the league saying it.
I agree.
And they're crapping all over it. Like, they want to be different, and they really, you know, there's no promotion relegation, there's no, all these things that they supposedly make MLS unique, and yeah, that's fine. But you don't need to go and crap on the U.S. and the U.S. history and the U.S. Open Cup. It's one thing to say, well, we don't necessarily want to be like the European leagues, that's fine. But I don't know. And I hope fans make their voice heard. If the U.S. Open Cup is important to them, you know, then they should. Oh, and by the way, one other thing. One of the reasons is also, American fans, we don't like other competitions. It's confusing. One competition, blah, blah, blah. So first of all, it's not really. And it also gave a spot for, I think it's CONCACAF Champions Cup or something like that. First of all, like, correct me if I'm wrong, you're a big NBA fan. I believe you'll be going to the NBA game in Paris.
I am indeed.
Didn't the NBA introduce an in-season tournament this year?
The Lakers, who won't even have a banner now.
Exactly.
For the whole NBA.
Wait, and NBA fans within the U.S., are they American? National Basketball Association was in America?
The highest
TV it's not
ratings.
Some weird Canadian thing, even though. Oh, just
the
checking.
The highest TV ratings of the season or something like that.
Funny
the
that.
Final, so, you know.
Lyon make it two wins in a row, beating Nantes 1-0. John Texter is smiling again. He was brilliant with the Stonewise.
Stonewise, three wins in a row even, Gab. Against
you can't
Toulouse.
Stop him. You could only hope to contain him.
Toulouse, Monaco, and Nantes, they played well. Like I said, with the goal, Cherki with the assist on his 100th League 1 appearance.
Future Italian international, Ryan.
Of course. And Stonewise, great. I mean, I saw him after the game. In his like a post-match press conference, he just looks so normal, you know, as like not really like a top club head coach or anything like that.
So he looks like a guy. He looks like Dean Smith.
Yeah, just like a normal guy, like your friend that you go to the pub with kind of thing. He's a lovely, lovely guy. I'm so happy for him. It's a very late success in a career that was shaped in academies and things like that, in our lower divisions, clubs like Red Star. Great for him. I think now, and I'm expecting the confirmation very soon that he's going to get the job until the end of the season, which I think he deserves. And then in the summer, you see what you do with him. I think he'll be very happy to go back to the academy, to do whatever he wants, but at least he has a shot at it. And so far, okay, they obviously lost the game before they against Marseille, before the three games, the three wins in a row, but still it's very good. So now they can have a really good Christmas.
You know, if the season started in like, but after St. Nicholas Day, which I believe is December 6th, I think they would be top of the table. They're just pointing it out.
Okay. And Gab, you have a correction to make after the last podcast.
I did. Remember I told you about, you know, Milan winning 3-0 at the weekend and Giancarlo Simic coming on and or not coming on. Well, yeah, actually coming on for Pobega if he got injured and scoring.
Yeah.
And I said that his dad was Dario.
Yeah, we know Dario. Yeah.
We know. Well, you didn't correct me at the time, so I'm going to correct
this
now.
Well, no, because
I assumed. So, not only is Dario Simic, who's Croatian, not his dad, but this dude, Giancarlo Simic, is actually Serbian.
Yeah.
So it's even a different country.
But Roko Simic, who plays striker for Salzburg, is the son of Dario Simic.
Dario Simic has three sons who play football. I knew Roko Simic, obviously, was his son.
The best.
I just thought that maybe he had this other son named Giancarlo who played for him. But no, this is some other...
No.
This is another guy.
So
I'm sure
apologize to the Simic
So yes, I just wanted to clarify that. It's a different Simic.
Yeah.
But... Both, well, one a Milan legend, one on his way to being a Milan legend.
Exactly.
And who knows? Maybe Rocco will come over and maybe have two Simiches who play for different countries.
And different families.
Brazil's national team doctor gave an update on Neymar and suggested it's not realistic to expect him to be back for the Copa America. He's going to save himself for the Saudi
Pro. I think we all knew it. We all expected it. Now it's pretty much confirmed that the injury that he suffered, obviously, a few weeks ago was just too serious for him to be back on June 10th or something like that, which is the start of the Copa. I mean, he would have to be back not just there, but way before to be able to get ready physically, fitness-wise. It's just not possible. And there's no risk. There's no point risking it.
What?
To have a setback then. You see what I mean?
Like, to screw up your Saudi Pro League season? I don't know.
But you try to rush it and you start, you play the first game of Copa America and then you have a setback and you do the other knee or the same one or something.
I take your point, and I'm not a doctor. I do wonder from Neymar's perspective, and this is a purely cynical view that I have. What are the main appointments in your life going forward? It's the World Cup in 2026 that you can probably still play in.
Yeah, you will.
And it's the Copa America. Right?
Yeah, no, I know.
So if he does re-injure himself or can't contribute or whatever, is it going to affect him in 2026? Probably not, because, you know, that's not what he's going to be judged on. I don't know.
I leave this open. But this is mid-December. By April, he might have...
We'll have a different view.
Yeah, maybe.
Exactly.
So we'll see. Lawyers for Juventus and Cristiano Ronaldo gave their final statements in the legal battle. Remember, we talked a lot about it on the show. Around the 19.5 million euros bonus that Cristiano believes is owed by Juventus from his time at the club. Gab, one thing for sure, that Juve don't need this anyway.
No, and if you were really cynical, you might say Cristiano Ronaldo does not need another 19.5 million euros.
Yeah.
But equally, and we don't know this, but his lawyers are saying, wait a minute, you asked us all to basically take a pay cut. You then said, don't worry, you'll be getting some of that money back later in loyalty bonuses. Just don't tell anybody because technically we're not supposed to be doing this. And later they got busted for it. So Cristiano agrees with it. And then at the end, and then in the summer, Juve sell him and ship him off to Manchester United. And then they're like, okay, well, look, since you're not here, you're not getting your loyalty bonus, right? So his lawyer's saying, wait a minute, that wasn't a real loyalty bonus. I was doing you a favor in taking this pay cut during COVID. So I can understand. And look, I mean, I haven't seen the lawyer's arguments. I don't know what Juve's case is going to end up being and whether court will accept it. But I can see why Cristiano would tell his lawyers, wait a minute here. You know, I'm not Father Christmas. I'm Cristiano Ronaldo. And I get his viewpoint too.
Yeah.
Jules, that brings us to an end.
What a show.
But as the holiday season And because we're going to be respecting the holiday season, our next show will be sort of a
Christmas special.
Or a holiday special for those who don't celebrate Christmas.
Yes, true, true.
And then we're going to be back with the real stuff after Boxing Day when, of course, the Premier League returns. Well, Premier League never really goes away, does it? Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.